move into the 1 o'clock hour here at 97.5 The Fanatic. On this day, a year ago, it was actually an evening game. So the chances, the thoughts, the possibilities of advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals for the Philadelphia 76ers were alive and well still. And in a matter of hours, 7 o'clock tip, I do believe it was, Tom McGinnis was in the building. He was making the call, and he's on the line with us now. Tom, thank you for being on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. How are you, sir, first and foremost?
I'm great, indeed. First of all, happy Mother's Day. I remember when you were with child.
Yes.
In the year, you helped me out here. 2005, you and I sat in a section of the Raleigh-Durham
yes.
International Airport in North Carolina.
This is so true.
It was early October, leaving camp at Duke University. And then you had your first child a month later or so in November of 2005. So your son is at Max would be 14 years old.
This right? is correct. What a memory you have, sir.
Right. Well, my wife was pregnant as well.
Yes.
And so my wife, Robin, we wish her a
happy Mother's Day.
And
yes.
it's my daughter's birthday.
Oh, my.
So we go back to the speaking of the playoffs. I missed a playoff game in 2003. Our first child was born, and the Sixers were playing a home playoff game with the Detroit Pistons. Coach Brown was still the coach, and that was the first ever game I missed. And then we played subsequently the next day. So I was at the arena
wow.
for our child. It was Mother's Day, yeah. So obviously a special day for you and all the mothers out there who do an incredible job.
I appreciate that. We all appreciate that. Thank you. So let's see. It's, you know, going up there last year and you're going to play a game seven. As I say, in sports, no matter what sport we're talking about, game sevens are special in their own right. And then I can't even imagine as a broadcaster to have those opportunities, what that is like for you. And this was the most recent, but you would have had games in the past, obviously, that were game sevens also. What was it like for you to be in that building last year?
Well, it's as you say, it's so exciting, and I digress just a second. But the first time I ever met Doris Burke, the Sixers were in the 2012 season. That was the truncated season where they ended up playing the Celtics on Memorial Day weekend
oh,
on
yes.
Saturday. And we didn't know her. Myself, Tony DeLeo, were sitting on the bench in Boston, and she came over, a basketball person, and now we've come to really know Doris and really appreciate her work and all that. And like yourself, a female broadcaster who's done extremely well. But all she said to Tony and I, and this was by way of introduction, game seven. And then we both, all the three of us sat there and visited for like 20 minutes. Because as you said, that's really all you have to say.
Yes.
But in that situation, and really any situation, obviously you've done the games and you've done all the homework. And typically, certainly in the Eastern Conference, you've already played this team three or four times. So it's like the 11th or 10th game you're playing a team. So there's not really a whole lot of homework per se. So it's really a lot of anticipation and really just waiting for the day. Not unlike a player where you just can't wait for it to come. And in this case, in Toronto, I actually got to sit in the front row because normally that spot, and we're lucky there, we sit in the second row in terms
yes.
of our broadcast position. But in this case, there wasn't local television because the networks take over in round two. So Mark and Alan weren't sitting there. And then I've always, like, ESPN Radio had that spot earlier in the series, but they kind of were running into their full allotment of games, and they wanted to save, if I understand it correctly, they wanted to save some games for down the road. So they didn't do the game, and you're going to get to sit in the front row.
That's a perfect seat. Must be
yeah,
in the front row.
Great. When we talked about doing this, I was just going through some texts and pictures, you know, like that I sent home, and I had taken a picture of Leonard warming
yes,
up.
I know. You sent
and
me
it was
to.
Time dated. Yeah, it was time dated. It was like 4:30, and she said the game was like at 7, or it might have been 6. But and my question I sent back home is, can we stop this guy? And who knew, but like, the guy had 45 points and 41 points, so it wasn't like this great intuitive moment by me, but he was warming up by himself right in front of me.
Right in front of me.
And, yeah, and I was like, can we stop this guy? And like 3 hours later and 4 bounces and 45 points, we found out we couldn't. But I ended up visiting with Freddie Colefield, who's a longtime friend in the business who had, you know, played in the CBA, and he works with the Knicks. And he and I just sat there for 30 minutes. just laughing and having a great old time. And that's kind of what I did prior to that game, sitting there. But the game was, you know, certainly building to that stage was very exciting, obviously.
Tom, I actually went back just to make sure, you know, how sometimes you remember a lot. But, I mean, it was such a close game, back and forth, tied. Somebody goes up, too. I mean, there were big shots that were made.
It didn't start out that way.
See, no.
I went back, too, and I remember. And here's the thing. Okay, so the Sixers scored 13 points in the first quarter, missed a ton of shots, had a huge amount of turnovers, and you knew that, you know, they would come back and they would have the lead, and they did have the lead late. But those are the things, that's the reason as coaches and as a staff and as players you prepare for, and you go down to the minute details and you value every possession.
Right, because we always go to the end, but if you had taken care of business earlier, you might not be in that position.
Yeah, and even going back further into the series, so 11 to 45 points in game one, they win handily. Sixers, unbelievable. It's the first time they won in Toronto. In game two, they win the game. It's the first time they won in Toronto in years.
Yes.
6 or 7 years they hadn't won there. So the series is even. They come back. It's unbelievable at the center. That first game back in a playoff series of that magnitude, unbelievable. The crowd over the years has been sensational. And it certainly was then. And the Sixers ride that wave and blow them out. And now we go to game four.
That's
the game.
Yep.
That's the game where the Sixers. Yeah. So the game was tied with 6 minutes to go. And Leonard, and again, the Sixers had some, you know, empty possessions in that span, but Leonard hits a huge three with a minute to go over Joel Embiid, and that puts them over the hump. He had another 41-point game. And if the Sixers win that, if they manage those final 6 minutes, they're up in that series 3-1.
I know. And this,
going back to Toronto, potentially for 2 games, but certainly would come back for game six here, and they won that game in Philadelphia. And that also, that game four was one of the games where Joel was not 100% healthy. He was sick. Certainly, I would think that would have factored into that.
Yeah, that
but
was
that
when he,
game right there.
Yeah, that was when he texted Brett Brown early in the morning saying he didn't know if he could go, and they gave him the you know, fluids or IV or whatnot.
Yeah. So to me, that would have turned things. But go ahead.
I agree with you because we did the statistics. I mean, when you're up 3-1, the number of wins versus losses of winning the series, it's like 150+ to 7.
Right.
I mean, it's mind-blowing. But for a person who's broadcasting, and we have a number of people call in and they love listening because they hang on your every word. When you have a play as a it's going to be a, you know, a game winner or not, one way or the other, you're either going to overtime or you have a, like, are you just saying to yourself, I'm going to watch, I'm going to describe what I see. And in those 4 seconds, you know, everybody's listening and hanging on your every word. What is that like for you?
Well, interesting you bring it up. And again, you can't worry about, you have to execute. You know what I mean? I can't worry about what people are, you know, I know obviously it's a big moment, but again, I go back and I've already explained this once in another forum, but it's worth describing because you're asking me as an announcer. And I mentioned that front seat. Okay.
Yes.
So I'm by the Sixers bench, you know, as I face the corner, our benches to the left. And, I knew, and because, you know, we get blocked certain times, you know, now most of the times, as I mentioned, I'm lifted off the court. So you don't get blocked as much, but you're further away and you miss the heartbeat of the game. But the visual is actually maybe better, even though you're further, much further away.
Right.
But in this case, as I said, I was sitting on the playing surface. So down by the Raptors bench, all the way where the shot ended up occurring.
Yep. Right in front of
me. I knew. I couldn't see that. Like, Nick Nurse is standing up, their bench is standing up, the table, all those things were in the way. So, and I obviously have a monitor. One has the stats. It's like a live box course, you know, at the end. And then the other one is the feed of the game. And the feed of the game has to be the live feed. We go through this all the time at the center, certainly when TNT and ESPN and ABC come in, because with NBC Sports Philadelphia, JR and those guys are unbelievable in giving me a feed on the road all the time. But sometimes we get a feed and it's like 6 ABC. I'm like, that doesn't work for me. That's like E-Tech, whatever it is. It's delayed. I have to have the live feed
you
know, for the replays or whatever. So my point is I rehearsed in the third quarter based on what if something happens in that far corner in the guts of the game and I'm obstructed, you know, so I actually call the play off the monitor in the third quarter to practice.
Wow.
And so as they inbound, Ibaka plays it into Kyle, and that's on the opposite side of the court, you know, far into the court. And then they throw it to Kawhi, and then they start, and Ben's with him, and then Joe, and then I turn to the monitor. As soon as Kawhi got it and started making a beeline toward that corner, I called the game off TV. So when you said, as an announcer, you're watching, I was watching. I was watching just like you, except he was 48 feet away from me.
Exactly.
So I had to call it off the monitor. And, you know, it's interesting that NBA TV or radio does this thing that whatever the call of the game, broadcasters, I don't even know what it was, whatever it means, I won that the next morning because they had all these different Spanish and Turkish and the different calls, excited international calls, plus the Toronto call or whatever. But mine was a little hesitant because I was, what I thought was a little hesitant, because I was watching it on TV, and I feel like if I'd have been able to watch it live, it would have been like, you know what I mean? But I was just trying to get the call right. And I think that's maybe the biggest thing in a big situation like that is just make sure you're there to report. Just make sure you get the call precise and right and descriptive and just say what's happening.
And let me ask you, Tom, because as soon as the four bounces, it really does feel like there was divine intervention in some way, shape, or form because it stays up there so long. But because you are now closer to the Sixers bench, when that does finally drop, is your attention now looking to that bench, the people involved, and what their reaction is?
Yeah, I mean, Tobias was under the basket and turned. They're all walking toward me. Their season has just ended in the most cruel way. Yeah, right. And so the emotion and the disbelief of that, and anytime your season ends, it's abrupt, you know, and we've had it both ways. I can remember back after they went to the finals, the next year we were in Boston. At that time it was a 5-game series. Coach O'Brien was the coach and got blown out. Antoine Walker and Pierce were thrown in three. And that was brutal. That's like just taking punches for 30 more minutes because the game was over at half that. But that game right there obviously was just a shock. You know, because, you know, the Sixers certainly had the potential of, you know, obviously they would have had an A go to overtime, B beat Milwaukee, but you never knew if they kept together and they started to play together because the group hadn't been together a lot, that the potential maybe getting to the finals, you know, and doing something really special was there, but not when it ends like that. So that was unfortunate, and it is. It's just a real cold, dark feeling when your season ends. After such the drama and the buildup, you knew it was going to be hard to win the game, but it was right there in the cusp. So real tough for our guys at that point.
It was. Can I fast forward? If they are able to have some portion of this season pick up, whether they do it in a destination or not, one of the things I've been talking about is calling a game in an empty arena. That would be a challenge too. Do you not think so?
Right, and again, this is hypothetical just because we don't know where this is going, but it's certainly a prospect of that, you know. But I also think, and I've done this before. I did the FIBA World Championships years ago.
Oh, calling it off the monitor.
Yeah, I think that might be a remote location where you don't even go in the building.
You're probably right. I was telling Tyler that I was up very late last night because I was doing some schoolwork, and when I was finished, the Korean baseball came on ESPN like right around 2 a.m. live, and I had to watch it because I wanted to, but it was so strange to have such they're playing baseball, but it was so quiet, and the announcers were exactly as you said, in a remote location, having, you know, a good conversation about it, but it was very different.
Well, and as far as calling the game, whether it's in a remote location, obviously that'd be different because you're doing exactly what I just said in terms of watching on the monitor. And that's where, that would require a little bit more focus and whatnot. And I think if you get the natural sound, and then you're laying in the broadcaster's, description and whatnot, it's not going to be all that different. I think what you miss is the excitement.
The energy.
Again, oh, yeah. Like sitting where I sit, I'm basically sitting with the fans, and you feel the palpable energy. And that's what makes going to sporting events so incredible, whether it's an Eagles game or a Phillies game or the Flyers. It's just so, you know, you're part of it. And that's where, you know, the excitement and the drama, and that phrase we use oftentimes before a big game is, boy, you can cut the energy with a knife. You can feel it. That's true. And you've been there. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Any fan that's listening, they're aware of that too. And that's, it's a vibe, you know what I mean? It comes from each person. It's just palpitating through there. So that part would be different. But, you know, and the drama of the moment, I think, would be changed a little bit about that. But the outcome, see, these guys, the players, they feed off the energy. But the players, the competition as an athlete, you know, they play pickup all the time.
And, that's true.
You know, trust me, that one-on-one battle, you know, whether there's anybody there or it's at the park or it's in the gym or it's in practice, that's enough right there. That's enough human drama right there for those guys. They're going to still be getting after it.
Yep,
that's
a good
point. I mean, the
results,
you know, they'll be high-fiving or elbow-touching with five guys on the court and their teammates, and they're going to miss it. But the actual, you know, it's the problem is solving the opposition. That's your challenge.
Yep, that's true.
The athletes, the play, you know, believe it or not, I think once they get into the heat of the competition,
will be very similar.
I don't think that's going to be too different.
Yep, I think you're right. Tom, I appreciate your time and thank you for all the great calls over the years. Really fun to listen to. Yes.
Thank you, Dave.
And happy
Mother's Day.
I appreciate and say, tell Robin I was asking for.
I will.
Thank you, sir. Okay. I appreciate your time. Thanks for being on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fest. Tyler, do we have Tom's call of the end of the game? I need to relive it one more time, please.
Harris plays off the ball. Kyle and Siakam screen for Leonard. Leonard has it out top. Leonard against Ben Simmons. 2 seconds to go. Kawhi Leonard hangs. Fire shot up. It rims, and it rims, and it went in. Toronto wins 92-90. Are you kidding me? Suspended animation, a pause, and then the ball went in. Kawhi Leonard has won the game.
Have it just to come up with the word suspended animation, a pause, and then it went in. I mean, that's great vocabulary right there. That is outstanding. And he snuck in the clock. We knew when it got to 2 seconds. Well done. All right. I appreciate the patience of you guys listening or hanging on the phone. So let's get to Paul. Paul, I told you I would get to have Tom on, and I'm glad you were listening. Thanks for calling the Fanatic.
Oh, wow. That was great. He's amazing.
He really is.
And I hope maybe I could chat with him because, you know, I'm blind, right? Mm-hmm. You know my story, right?
Absolutely.
And he's amazing. And I'm at the game when he's announcing. I'm at the game. I'm there.
Yes. Yes.
Sitting in the audience. And I'm so focused on his suspended animation every day.
Yeah.
But I hope that I could just chat with him for a minute to tell him how much I appreciate him. Because I don't think that announcers truly understand, you know, providing a play-by-play for someone who can't see the game.
Sure.
He got it down. He's got it down. And I so much enjoy him. And I listened to the whole thing. And I hope he hung on and listened. Maybe he's listening. And I hope he understands how important he is to me and people who struggle like I do because can't see. I don't struggle when he's announcing. And I wanted to let everybody know that. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Excellent, Paul. I'll make sure he knows that you were the first call after he got off. I will make sure he knows.
Please. And you have a happy Mother's Day. It's so wonderful that you getting all this time.
Thank you.
Because I enjoy very much the way you do your show. So thank you very much. Happy Mother's Day.
All right, Paul. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. And I'm glad Tom gives such a great picture for you. And it is important to be able to live in those moments, especially when you need his eyes. 610-632-0975. And I have talked about there are times that you get blocked out, and it can also be because a coach stands in front of you. And so to think that Tom realized in that third quarter, like, what if I get blocked out? Because he could tell that was a possibility. that he practiced calling off the monitor. And it is so true. You need the live feed, because nothing worse than being behind when everybody else already knows it. So to have practice of that in the third, and then it comes down to that kind of play in the exact spot where he can't see. He gets blocked out only one part of that court, and he had practiced. Unbelievable. Let's check in with Noah in Fishtown. Noah, how are you? And thank you for calling the Fanatic.
Hey, Dee. It's an honor to talk to you.
Oh, thanks. Nice to talk to you.
I shifted my comment from after hearing the call again. It just brought me back to all the tears and the laying on the floor after that shot happened.
Yes.
I want to give a shout out to the wives and the moms, like my wife and my mom, that were married into the Philadelphia sports fan. Like, my wife is from New York.
Oh, okay.
I think she was a West Virginia University fan.
Okay.
Not a big football fan. And then we got married, and like, she's every Sunday, every game day is always on board. My mom, we had this big party, and my wife, she really didn't know why we were having this party, but that game was so amazing. And then
the end.
End like that.
Yes. Actually, I was glad that Tom reminded me that he had only scored 13 points in that first quarter. Because I went back and like Embiid was one of six in the first quarter. J.J. Redick was one of five and Jimmy Butler was one of four. So their struggles early. But if you go to the highlights on YouTube, most of it picks up in the second half when the game starts to go back and forth. So anyhow, game sevens are special, I think, Noah. And would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And you had a house full of people for that one last year.
Full of Miami Heat fans for some reason. That's another story. But
maybe they're Jimmy Butler fans now.
we don't talk that name.
I got you. Well, I appreciate you calling in, and reliving it is partly painful, but I do love the energy that comes with games that come down to the wire. I think that's just a really cool thing to experience. And obviously, whether I'm watching it on TV or I've been in the building for those, I think that's fun.
Thank you, Dee.
Absolutely. Noah, have a great day. And thanks for calling the Fanatic. Andrew, you'll be up next on the other side. We'll continue talking about Game 7 from a year ago. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
It is Mother's Day, so a shout out to not just my mom and my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law. Happy Mother's Day to you. And while a lot of times people like to be together, so maybe you'll check in with your mom, Zoom, or on the phone. We also would be in the thick of the NBA playoffs as we were a year ago. And today would have marked the day, Sunday this time last year. Sixers and Raptors were getting ready for Game 7. And a short while ago, we had Tom McGinnis on, who was in Toronto, called the game for the Fanatic, and had a front row seat which is pretty cool. And I do know when he says normally we were in the second row, because when I was still covering the Sixers and writing for Comcast Sportsnet Philadelphia, I was two seats down from Tom. So I know exactly where he normally is, and I know exactly the spot where he was, because it opened up because there was no local TV broadcast. By the time you get to the second round, it is only national broadcasts. And as a matter of fact, at 2 o'clock, we're going to talk to Kevin Harlan, who called the game for TNT last year as well, and see what his thought process was as that game came down to the wire and Kawhi Leonard scored his final two of the 41 points he had on the day. And it was a four bouncer. I didn't want to ask Tom because he was calling it off the screen as he told us. But Tyler, when I went back and re-looked, because the one caller, I think it was Jay, who said, like, Ben Simmons starts out on him and then he kind of lets Joel Embiid. I don't know that he let him. I think Kawhi had him beat by a step, and that's why Embiid looks like he goes to try to help.
So it was the right switch.
To me.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how Ben could have stayed any closer to him. To me, Kawhi had gotten one step ahead of him. And that's why Embiid comes with some help defense, which is what you're supposed to do. And he continued to try to push him to the baseline, which is also what you're supposed to do.
Well, and two, thinking about it, you know, that last shot, unless right before the play happens, unless it goes back to Gasol, who's inbounding the pass, we all know Kawhi Leonard's taking the shot.
Exactly.
So they made the right defensive play.
Not only that, Nick Nurse, I told you I read the article where Kawhi says he remembers the timeout, and then Nick says what he says. Nick Nurse said, I mean, basically, we want to get him the ball at the top of the key, which is what they did. And he said, and from there, it's his call. If he sees somebody else, sure, I guess he could leave it for a Gasol or a Kyle Lowry if they are so wide open. Otherwise, that guy's putting, you know, he's putting it on his back. That's what you're there for. That's why you ended up there in a trade for DeMar DeRozan. And that's also why you were the MVP and why you had a championship. All of those things. All right, let's go to Andrew from Phoenixville. Andrew, thank you for the patience. Thanks for listening to The Fanatic.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I'm sorry. I literally am pulling into my parents' driveway right now. We're at the edge of the driveway in Malvern because my girlfriend who's with me in the car right now, we just made a Happy Mother's Day sign that we're putting out on the window for her to watch.
So, oh, excellent.
My girlfriend just made banana bread, so we're just dropping it off right now. And literally, I was waiting. I'm like, I hope I get on to say hi to her before we get in the driveway.
Yes, but, yeah. I'm sorry.
leave it here.
Oh.
Yeah. I just wanted to call because I was listening into last minute, obviously end of game, disappointments and everything of that nature. And I really thought that one particular game when I was 12 years old was when the Phillies played the Blue Jays.
Yeah, Joe Carter.
Yep, and Mitch Williams threw that game at the very end, and I literally cried the next 2 days because I wanted to see a championship so badly. And then on the other end, obviously, the two huge games that made me cry for the best were when Villanova won at the very last second versus North Carolina.
Sure, Chris Jenkins.
Championship, that was phenomenal, and then obviously the Eagles win. So those were the two games that I, you know, obviously the Phillies winning in 08. I was just, those are the three, but the one that really disappointed me the most, the youngest, was when they lost in 93 when I was 12 years old.
Yep, I remember that well. Believe it or not, in a charity golf outing, I have actually played with Joe Carter in a charity outing since then. And he says every time he comes to Philadelphia, they still can't stand him, even though even though years have passed. But
absolutely. Well, I certainly wish you and your listeners a happy Mother's Day today.
Thank you, Andrew.
Hope
and thanks for
able to enjoy it.
Yes, thanks for hanging on, and good luck with your little parade down the driveway there.
Yep, we're actually standing, and my dad's looking at us like, what are they waiting for? Come on.
All right, tell your dad I'm the reason, I'm the fault.
No fault at all.
All right.
Happy Mother's Day to everybody, okay?
Thank you, Andrew. Have a great day. Thank you, and happy Mother's Day to your mom, too. That's a good idea. We did a drive-by parade for my uncle's birthday the other day. It was awesome. we had about 40 cars, and it was his 78th birthday, and everybody made signs. They're huge sports fans. He used to be the athletic director at St. Joe's, and so there were Hawk Hill fans. There were all kinds. But so when I could have a visual of what Andrew and his girlfriend were doing with the sign on the car, you know, I like how people, you get creative and you do the best you can in times when you can't be together first in the same way. You can still have good moments like they driving down that driveway. Let's check in with Alan in Villanova. Alan, thank you for calling the Fanatic. How are you?
Hey, what a wonderful show you got going.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely phenomenal show, and I thought your caller Paul really said it well. I mean, I unfortunately do have my eyesight, but McGinnis is great, and he's phenomenal. But I was telling your producer that since you left us all so depressed listening to Kyle Leonard, that he had a poll of Tom McGinnis's call of the Vince Carter shot.
Ooh, that's a good one. I know.
But it's on the other end. But by the way, I just looked at my TV, and that ball's still bouncing around, you know.
It's the longest shot.
It's still bouncing around. It's still going up there. But I'm going to be 69 in July, and I've heard a lot of broadcasters in my time. And it's a coincidence today that you have maybe two of my favorites on the same day. Tom McGinnis is great, and you're about to have Kevin Harlan. And I think he's one of the most underrated, underappreciated voices in the industry, because he does what he calls college basketball, he calls pro basketball. And I have a tennis doubles contract on Monday night, so we don't have it now, but from 8 to 9:30. And even though I only have a 10-minute drive home, I drive it very slowly, because it doesn't matter if the Monday night game is a horrible game. When you have, I don't think he does it anymore, but when Kevin Harlan was doing the Monday night games, it didn't matter who was playing. It's just his voice. So you could tell him that Alan from Villanova is a big fan.
I will. He still does. I don't know if he does the Monday night. Well, he's still on Westwood One.
Oh, you know what? I think he does the Monday night. He just doesn't do it with Boomer anymore.
Correct.
He does it with somebody else.
Yes. I have the same experience. If I'm in my car, I'll hear him, and I'll stay tuned just because I love listening to him.
There are so many. He's up there with all of the great ones.
He is as nice as he is good at his job.
Oh, that's good to hear. I've never had the pleasure. I would like to meet him.
Yes.
When you talk about disappointing, the one I'm going to talk about, it wasn't a buzzer beater, but in all my years as a Philadelphia sports fan, my most disappointing game, but I still consider myself extremely fortunate to have been at it, was Game 6 of the 1980 NBA Championship, when, you know, everybody just assumed, not the Sixers were going to win the title, but everybody just assumed, since that was still the 2-2-1-1-1 format.
Yeah, that was when Magic was a rookie. And he had
absolutely.
Yep, and they had
Kareem's
no
out with yep, an ankle injury.
Out with an ankle injury.
Everybody just says, we got this game. We'll see what happens in Game 7, but we know we're going back for a Game 7.
Yep.
And was not meant to be. But you know what? I won't go on too much. But you know, everybody talks magic, magic, magic for that game. But what I still see going through my head when I think about that game, even from the third deck of the spectrum, center court third deck, which is all I could afford then, was Jamal Wilkes. Nobody remembers Jamal Wilkes throwing in 37 points.
Whoa.
In addition to Magic's 42. And I could tell you this, I've said it before, I may be stretching the truth a little bit, but I think the reason they call him Silk was because I don't think any of those shots, of those 37, I don't think any of them hit him at all.
Remember, and his shot, Alan, you can appreciate this. Remember how it came like off the back of his head a little bit? He had that
unorthodox delivery, but it didn't matter because it would, that's why they called him Silk.
Yep.
Because
no, I hear you.
Always went in. But I don't want to end on a down note. I mean, the other caller was right. Your previous caller was talked about the Villanova game, and I think I mentioned before, I was lucky enough to have been in Houston for the Chris Jenkins shot. That's probably one I'll never forget.
Right, and so that's one of the things. I mean, this I am remembering last year's game seven. But you are right. The one, you know, the two game sevens in 01 that the Sixers won in their building were, had those kind of moments to it also.
They absolutely did. 01 was so magical. I mean, just the whole season. I mean, I was down there with my two kids, and we would get these $10 discount seats all throughout the year. They put us up in the nosebleeds, behind, you know, second level, way up there. But it didn't matter. You were in there. Every night was a party with AI and the way Pat Croce ran the place and the way you had World Be Free at the foot of the escalators handing out balloons. It was a time that I don't think is ever going to be repeated, no matter how good the Sixers get. But I don't think anybody created a feel for a fun atmosphere.
It was fun.
I guess what was then the first Union Center at that point.
And,
thanks for letting me reminisce a little
Absolutely.
Bit. Absolutely. Wonderful, wonderful job.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Can I just, I did not remember this, of the 1980 game that Alan was speaking of when, and he is right, it was 2-3-2, right? Yes. And so it's game six here, and you're going to have to go, oh, no, it was 2-2-1 is how they, 2-2-1-1-1, I guess. I'll do my math correctly soon. But anyhow, it was game six in the Spectrum, and Magic was all, I mean, he was everywhere, but part of his 42 points was that he was getting to the line, and he was 14 of 14 at the line. What Jamal Wilkes did, I did not remember this. 16 of 30 from the floor. 16 of 30 with no three-pointers. 37 for that guy. Unbelievable. Yeah, and I remember the celebration because they were in the Spectrum, and Magic had the trophy, but then he also got the MVP. He was a new kid. I had remembered him from the year before when he played in the NCAA tournament. And yeah, it was, those were good times too. 610-632-0975. Lou, you're up next on the other side. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
The amazing thing about Kevin Harlan's call of last year's Game 7 between the Sixers and the Raptors that would have been played on this Sunday, this was the day, was how much time before he says, is this the dagger? And you have to wait so long because it bounced four times. That is crazy. And the final score was 92-90 in favor of Kawhi Leonard and company. Let's check in with Lou, who's on a cell. Lou, thank you for the patience, and thanks for calling the Fanatic.
Happy Mother's Day, D.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Kawhi Leonard went 16 of 39 that game, I think it was. Something like that. I think he shot, four, maybe, I think, I could be wrong, but I think he shot like 40 shots to score.
To score is 41?
Yeah, it is scored a 41. If I'm not mistaken, I don't want to be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure he shot at least 38, 39 shots.
Leonard was 16 of 39.
39 shots it took to score 41 points.
39. Whoa.
That wasn't bad defense. That was just a great player hitting a big shot in a big moment. And honestly, I don't really know if there's anything we could have did about that.
On that particular shot? No. I mean, as I said to Tyler, you know, I think he did get a step on Simmons. And I'm not, you know, he did. But you have the help defense from Embiid, who plays it so well. I mean, he uses his length. He contests it.
Why shooting a shot falling out of bounds?
Yep. And he had to get so much arc on that thing because of the outstretched Embiid. That's how that thing bounced around, because of the angle it came down at.
Yeah, that was that. Unfortunately, that was the basketball guys, and we just fell on the other end. I was having like a strong argument with a buddy of mine who was saying, you know, Ben Simmons didn't supposed to be a defender. He didn't play good defense. Like, I said, he shot 39 shots. I mean, a player of that caliber, if he shoots that many shots, how many do you think he's going to miss?
Yeah. I'd be curious. I mean, I know there were games that I covered Iverson that he would shoot 30 some shots.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I ever saw 39 in a game that didn't even go to OT.
No, that was, I mean, that's not the ball. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, maybe the next highest shooter was probably Kyle Lowry. And I don't even think he shot 15 shots.
Well, I did say, first of all, they only did a 7-man rotation for that game. Hold on. I had the box score. Yeah, let's see. You say Kyle Lowry.
That would be my guess. I mean, who else? Or maybe
Lowry was 4 of 13. Okay. Siakam was 4 of 11.
Okay.
Gasol, 3 of 8. Oh, well, but the real dagger in terms of not the shot was the dagger, but the performance that was hurtful was Serge Ibaka coming off the bench, and he was 6 of 10.
Yeah, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, he played like 28 minutes, and he had 17 points, 8 boards.
Yeah, and I vividly remember those points that he scored. They were like, it wasn't like a regular 17. It was like those shots that would get the crowd like going crazy.
Yep, he had a couple where he came down would catch a pass coming down the paint.
Right,
you know, one of them I know he laid it in and fell to the ground because he was flying through the lane.
Right.
Towards the end of the game.
So painful to hear that. But one last thing. We're very fortunate in this city to have both Tom McGinnis and Zumoff. I mean, yeah. I think both of those guys are just incredible. From the Iverson years up to now, it's just like, you know, I mean, most times I can't listen to sports on the radio. But with McGinnis, I mean, he's so hype about it that, you know, he just pulls you into it.
Absolutely. I mean, I know for me, and last year would have been one of them, they were in Toronto for that game, obviously, game 7. And I had gone to, like, work a watch party that was at Xfinity Live. But I can't stay to the end because I was coming to the station to do, right, like, a shift after Devon was done. And one of the reasons I never minded, like, getting in the car is because I have Tom keeping me company. And I would know what was happening.
I mean, and you can hear the frustration in his voice sometimes.
Oh, I know.
I mean,
when he used the term suspended animation, I mean, it's so true. It felt forever.
That paints a very vivid picture for you.
It does.
Well, have another day again. Take care.
I appreciate it, Lou. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Thanks for calling the Fanatic. It is true. You know, it helps when you have people who you can appreciate listening to them. I hope we always have radio call, you know, because like when I'm in my car, I like listening to games. I listen to hockey a lot. I'm trying to think if I listen to the other sports. I feel like when I'm for football, I'm more in the house watching football games then, except for that guy was right. I will hear the Monday night game occasionally in the radio. I don't know where I am. Oh, you know why? I used to teach a class on Monday nights and I would be coming back. That was what it was.
I have a ton of respect for radio play-by-play guys because the whole industry is difficult, but being on radio, you don't have anything else to go off of but your eyes and your voice. Which is why when you hear Tom set the floor, you hear Tim Saunders set the ice.
Yep.
You know exactly where the puck is. You know exactly where the ball is every time because these guys are so good at what they do.
Yes. And like I said to you, in that 4 seconds, Tom still got us like 2 seconds on the clock. You know, he still managed to still have the clock awareness part of this.
Time and space is really hard when you're in the thick of things
like
that.
And as I say, because you never know who's just tuning in. You might just be getting in the car and you need to know what's going on. So I also thought one of the things that Tom said that was interesting, by the game 7, because you also play in your division, that would have been the 11th time that you're calling these two playing each other. So your preparation is minimal the day of. You have seen these. You know everything about the players, and maybe you've updated your stats. But beyond that, these stories are very real to you. So you're waiting in anticipation of let's get this thing started. But those are great, and those moments of certainly playoff moments like a game seven and one that comes down to the wire. But you could have a regular season game, and I think that's one of the beauties of listening to Tom and the great play-by-play people is they do seem like the energy of an arena and the people. They feed off of that and in turn deliver it to us who are listening. And yeah. And when I listen, as painful as losing 92-90 to not be able to go to the Eastern Conference Finals for that team last year, it still is fun to bring back the feeling of sports and NBA playoffs that we're not experiencing right now and hope one day soon we will. Before I go to break, when I was talking with McGinnis and the difference of being up 3-1 in a series because he went back to the game four and letting that game get away was really critical, pivotal in the series. And that had been the Sunday before. But all time, teams are 240-11 up 3-1. Just wrap your head around that. 240-11. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, Kevin Harlan will be with us, the great announcer of TNT, and he called the game on the national stage last year when Kawhi Leonard hit that baseline jumper in the corner in front of his Toronto bench, and it sent the Sixers home. We'll talk to Kevin on the other side. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.